We'll hear argument first this morning in number 8716, Richard D. Shapiro versus the Kentucky Bar Association. Mr. Cox, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. This is the third case in 6 years which has come to this court from the various state courts and has involved absolute bans on various forms of written advertising by attorneys. In each of those cases, and they begin with RMJ, they go into the Zauderer case, and now in the Shapiro case, in each of those cases, there was no record evidence below which would justify the absolute ban which the bar associations advanced and in which the various state Supreme Courts sought to impose. We had thought that this court had made it absolutely clear in the Zauderer decision when it said that an attorney may not be disciplined for giving out truthful and non-deceptive advice to specific clients about their legal rights. We thought that that had settled the matter, but apparently it is not, and we are here once again on another issue where there has been imposed an absolute blanket ban on attorney advertising speech. The issue here today is something called targeted direct mail solicitation, which basically involves a situation where an attorney sends out a written letter to a person whom he has identified as having a specific legal problem, and that letter contains some generalized legal advice similar to the advice perhaps that was given in the Zauderer advertisements. The Kentucky court has upheld the absolute ban, and that is why we are here today. I would like to first go over just briefly the situation in Kentucky, the specific, what I would call all-encompassing rules that they have regulating attorney advertising, and then go briefly into the facts and then into the argument. Kentucky probably has as all-encompassing regulation of attorney advertising as any state in this country. What Kentucky basically has done is gone through this court's decisions and has seen in those decisions where the court has indicated various possible means of regulating attorney advertising. Kentucky has, without exception, adopted all of those, and then it's come up with some twists of its own. As this court suggested in RMJ and Central Hudson, first off, Kentucky has a strict pre-submission process. Under that process, advertisements of the type we're talking about here, and almost all advertisements except very limited routine advertisements, are required to be pre-submitted to an agency of the State Bar Association comprised of three lawyers that are appointed by the State Bar Association. Those three lawyers review the advertisements. They're given the power under the state regulation to conduct investigations, to subpoena witnesses, and in addition, under those regulations, they're given the power to, in effect, edit the advertisement by suggesting disclaimers, by suggesting changes in the language. And most importantly, from the standpoint of this case, under those regulations, an attorney has to wait at least 30 days before sending out any advertisement.
Mr. Cox, yes, sir. Let me look at this precise letter. It states, doesn't it, that it has come to my attention that your home is being foreclosed on. Couldn't that be misleading? It certainly indicates familiarity with this precise piece of real estate.
Well, I think what it indicates, Justice Blackmun, is that Mr. Shapiro had gone to the court records and determined that, in fact, there was a foreclosure action pending. I don't think that it indicates any more than that. And I think the important thing to note with respect to this particular advertisement is that it was submitted to three different state bodies, and in not one of those three did anybody say anything about it being false, misleading, deceptive, or anything else. It was submitted to the State Advertising Commission, who in the first instance reviews all advertisements. It was submitted to the Ethics Committee. Again, no statement that there was any problems. It was submitted to the State Supreme Court. The State Supreme Court did not in any way base its decision.
Mr. Cox, isn't it possible that all three of those agencies thought, well, it's clearly banned by an existing rule, so we don't have to reach the question whether the particular advertisement is misleading?
That is a possibility, but I do not.
In fact, has anybody reviewed this particular letter under the rule that was promulgated after the letter was first submitted?
The Kentucky Supreme Court did.
But they didn't tell us anything about whether it was misleading or not, did they?
The Kentucky Supreme Court simply said it was banned. They
banned by a broad regulation.
By the board, but they cited, I think it's important that they cited in their decision the fact that it had been reviewed by these lower bodies, and there had been no finding that it was false, misleading, or deceptive.
Finding that way, but there's no finding the other way either.
That's correct.
Well, Mr. Cox, go ahead.
Would it not be more neutral if they started off by saying, is your home being foreclosed? Then there would be no connotation that of familiarity with this particular thing, and it would be much more like the IUD case that we had some time ago.
But this letter is to be sent to people whose homes are being foreclosed.
Well, it might be. There might be a mistake. That's what concerns me a little bit, is that there is a possibility of being misleading.
Mr. Cox, do you think that the state is free to impose higher standards of truthfulness and honesty on advertising like this than would be the case for selling soap or vacuum cleaners or something of that kind?
Well, it is my view that the false, misleading, and deceptive rubric has to be judged in context. And we're talking in the context of a letter coming from an attorney.
Yes, that's why I'm asking the question.
And I am suggesting that under those circumstances, a letter coming from an attorney might be judged somewhat differently than a letter coming from the soap company.
So you would concede that higher standards may be imposed?
Somewhat higher standards, depending upon what the context of the letter is.
Do you think the state can ban telephone-targeted advertising?
It is my view that that is not the issue before the court.
Yes, I know.
In this case, but it is my view that the Aurelic decision involved a specific set of facts in that case, and telephone targeted solicitation would depend on the facts. I do not believe, consistent with the First Amendment overbreadth doctrine, that Aurelic means that all types of in-person solicitation could be banned. I think it depends on the facts of the case, and I think that's what the court has held in some of the other decisions. So I don't agree that there could be an absolute ban on telephone solicitation, but I don't believe the court gets to that point in this case. Our concern here today is that we have yet another example of a bar association without any fact-finding whatsoever simply banning a written advertisement. And the holding in the Zauderer case is that that can't occur. You have to look at the advertisement and determine whether it's false, misleading, or deceptive. We have a three-attorney panel that does that in Kentucky. And it should be left to them. Let me point out one additional thing. The Kentucky rules make it very clear that even if there is a problem, as Justice Blackmun suggested, maybe Mr. Shapiro should have said, is your home being foreclosed upon? If that's the kind of problem with the Shapiro advertisements, first off, that's not a basis for banning all targeted direct mail advertisements. And second, it's not a basis for banning Mr. Shapiro's advertisement, because under the specific rule, before the Advertising Commission goes to capital punishment, it's required, in essence, to consider modifications of the language in the advertisement, the insertion of disclaimers. For example, to answer your concern, they might suggest a disclaimer that not all people's homes have been foreclosed upon. I mean, I can't.
Saying, is your home subject to foreclosure? That would be banned under this rule.
Oh, that was
just a flat ban.
Yeah, the rule. Yes, Justice White. The rule bans anything you say in writing that's sent in the mail targeted to a person who, that you know has a specific legal problem. So you still have the ban in place, which I thought was removed in the Zauderer decision.
Is the Kentucky rule based on an American Bar Association suggested rule?
Rule 7.3.
Did the ABA, in working on its rule and ultimately promulgate, did it make any factual inquiries?
Those have not been brought to my attention. The kinds of factual in the comments to Rule 7.3, one of the prime reasons why the ABA rejected the pre-submission process, that appeared to have been the argument there, that some were saying, well, wouldn't pre-submission address these problems? And the ABA's comments said, well, no, it's too difficult. The agencies would be too busy, and they wouldn't be able to go through these advertisements. That certainly has not been the experience in Kentucky. This commission's been around for 6 years, and in their decision now, we've got to look at the Advertising Commission of the Kentucky Bar Association. They believed and recommended that the Kentucky Bar Association delete this rule they were enforcing because they felt it was unconstitutional under Zauderer. That, incidentally, also is the position of the American Bar Association Advertising Commission and the American Bar Association Ethics Commission and the Department of Justice Antitrust Division and the Federal Trade Commission. So all of the agencies that have looked at this, except for the trade associations, the lawyer trade associations, have in essence come to the conclusion that this is unworkable and unconstitutional.
Well, have they come to the conclusion that it's unworkable or that, in their view, it's unconstitutional because of our decision?
The Advertising Commission, I think, had two concerns. The Kentucky Advertising Commission, remember, they were the people who administer this on a day-to-day basis, and it seems to me if they had a concern about the workability of the system, they would have expressed it. But I will concede that for the most part, those administrative agencies that have looked at the issue have emphasized more this court's, what I think is clear holding in the Zauderer decision. Yes, that is correct. But the important point is that the people who would be administering this have expressed no fact-finding of any problem at all. The only fact-finding that we've had in this case, the amici have come into this court, and in their briefs, I think they concede that there's this factual vacuum, that we're acting on a naked record, and so they have attempted to, after the fact, supply a factual basis for this rule, which is unsupported in the record. And what they did is they went out and conducted what I can only call a jackleg survey and presented the results of that survey to this court. The survey was actually conducted after this court granted cert. But there's a nugget, there's a real important nugget in the survey of the Florida Bar Association, and that nugget, I think, really addresses the concerns that everybody has about what impact do these direct mail advertisements have on the recipients. And here's this wonderful nugget. This is the Florida Bar now in their survey. Virtually no one believes, and these are the recipients now, virtually no one believes that direct mail advertisements they received from an attorney was either intimidating or frightening or confusing. So the only evidence we have in this case before you is that. There's just no other evidence. And I think the Kentucky Supreme Court really realized that because in their decision, they didn't purport to rely on any evidence. Their decision was based upon the following. The serious potential now, that these kinds of advertisements have for the kinds of harm that this court has said could be a basis for a ban. They said it was entirely possible that these harms would result, and they said it was full of, quote, the possibilities. Well, I think, you know, it's possible the roof could fall here, but I don't think that's a basis for our leaving the courtroom. And I don't think the possibility that someone may be overreached or may be misled is a basis for a blanket ban. If there's a problem with an advertisement,
you say the possibility of being overreached isn't a basis for a blanket ban. Supposing there were evidence showing that something more than a possibility, you know, a reasonable probability or something like that, would you still say no blanket ban?
I would say that as to written advertisements, You have to look at each individual advertisement. I do not concede as a matter of fact or law that written advertisements are inherently deceptive by their very nature, nor do I concede as a matter of fact or law that letters sent out to people who have legal problems are inherently deceptive. I think what this Court has said in its prior opinions is, let's look at them on a case-by-case
well,
basis.
Well, supposing the Florida survey that you referred to, which you say was taken after the fact and wasn't the basic, you know, can't really be, supposing it had shown that, you know, maybe 30% of the people felt intimidated or misled, and that had been the basis for Kentucky's rule, would you say that the result was still the same?
No, I don't believe that we should get in the least common denominator situation. I don't concede that doing a survey, how would you survey about written advertisements in general?
Well, you regard it as a nugget, I thought, so I thought perhaps you thought it was useful.
No, I think it is useful on the other side.
I mean, what if it had come out the other way?
I think if it had come out the other way, then we'd be in a problem, but it says virtually no one. So if 99% of the Florida people had said they felt intimidated, overreached, and whatever, then maybe we'd have a problem. But I don't believe that's even a remote possibility. I don't think that there's any way you can design a survey which would survey for the to cover all possible written advertisements. I just don't think that's the case. My view is that, consistent with Zauderer, I mean, it's right there in writing, you have to look at each advertisement individually, and we've got a perfect process in place.
Well, I take it you think that some targeted mailings could be forbidden?
If on their face are false, misleading, or deceptive. Uh-huh.
And some can.
Some cannot be.
So if that's the case, what's the justification for declaring this rule invalid on its face? That's what you asked, isn't it?
I think that, well, as a first matter, I asked that Mr. Shapiro be permitted to send out this letter, but
all
yes.
All right, then all you're really asking is that as applied to your case, this rule is unconstitutional.
The problem...
Is that what you ask?
Yes, sir.
That's all you ask?
That's all I can ask because...
The overbreadth is not applicable in commercial speech cases.
Right, and that is what has caused the problems in the lawyer advertising area.
Mr. Cox, the Kentucky court did strike down the original rule, did it not?
Yes, sir.
And do I understand that the... Pardon?
It withdrew it.
Withdrew it.
Did it?
I thought it struck it down.
Oh, all right.
I believe it struck it down, although I don't understand the reason.
Well, I was going to ask next. Did the Kentucky Supreme Court say why they struck that one down?
They said why, but I think they misspoke. They said they were striking it down in view of Zauderer. I think what they really meant is they were striking it down in view of Primus, because the old rule had prohibited targeted direct mail solicitation for both pecuniary and non-pecuniary gain, and that's Primus on all fours. And Primus.
Now, the rule you have brought before us now, as I understand it, is a precise counterpart of the ABA rule, is it not?
Yes, sir. And it is precisely the same. It may be more severe than the old Kentucky. The only difference between this rule and the old Kentucky rule is that the old Kentucky rule was a part of it was unconstitutional under Primus, but as applied to the facts of this case, there's no difference between the application of 7.3 and the application of the old Kentucky rule.
But as to their reasons for striking down the first rule, you suggest they just misspoke.
I believe they struck it down on Primus because they deleted they put in a pecuniary gain requirement, and the only thing that could possibly explain that would be Primus. But that's not what they said. They said in view of Zauderer, and that doesn't make any sense to me.
Mr.
Well, it was the reason they looked. You're the one that, it was Mr. Shapiro that brought the Zauderer case before him, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. The Zauderer. I mean, Zauderer says. I mean, I just don't see how it can be any clearer. Zauderer says an attorney may not be disciplined for soliciting legal business through printed advertising containing truthful and non-deceptive information and advice regarding the legal rights of potential clients. That's what Dick Shapiro is doing. It's a written advertisement. The bar associations have come back in with this word game about, no, it's not an advertisement at all, it's solicitation. And this court in Bigelow has made clear that there's no difference, that the issue is not the label we put on it, the question is what's going on. And that quote I just read says an attorney may not be disciplined for soliciting legal business through printed advertising. We'll concede that when we send out these letters, we're soliciting legal business. We believe that any time you send out anything that's in the nature of an advertisement, you're soliciting legal business. So the distinction is not the label you put on it. The question is, what is it in fact? And they keep going back to the Aurelic case, which is the same defense. You would have thought they'd come up with a new defense after it was so soundly rejected in Zauderer, but they go back and say, well, sending out letters is just like in-person solicitation. And that just doesn't fly. That was what was rejected in Zauderer. In Zauderer, this court said the distinction between Zauderer, the in-person solicitation, and the written advertisement in Zauderer is the fact that you don't have the presence of a trained advocate there, no immediate yes or no. And most importantly, from our standpoint, there's an opportunity in our case for the intervention of bar agencies. That's one of the factors in the Zauderer decision. We've got a 30-day hold period, 30 days before anything can happen. And during that time, this thing can be edited, disclaimed, we can have hearings. And most importantly, this thing can go all the way to the Kentucky Supreme Court in one jump. If the Advertising Commission thinks there's a problem here, they can apply to the Kentucky Supreme Court for a restraining order to restrain publication.
Mr. Cox, how many states today do you think have this flat ban on targeted direct mail?
It's reported in our brief, and our numbers differ from the numbers that they reported, but it's around perhaps half. I'm not sure. We had gotten our figures out of the ABA service on attorney advertising, and so it's a little clearer. But there's a significant number that do have the ban, and I think most of it is due to the fact that it's contained in the ABA rules. So the question is this case like Aurelic or like Zauderer? I think it's clearly like Zauderer in RMJ and the other cases. In Aurelic, one of the commentators said it's a lot easier to throw out, or one of the commentators talking about this problem with respect to Aurelic said it's a lot easier to throw out a letter than it is a 200-pound lawyer sitting on your couch. And I think that's an important distinction. We don't have Mr. Shapiro in their living room, or if we're going to make it like Aurelic, we don't have them in the hospital room. We've got a letter there which says right on its face, this is an advertisement. And it's been pre-reviewed, it's been pre-screened, everything's been checked out on it.
Well, I'm still a little puzzled about what you say, everything's been checked out, because I'm not sure it was checked out in this case and with respect to this letter. And I also understand you're really arguing that you want us to approve this particular letter. You're not asking for the general ban to be struck down.
Well, I understand the overbreadth doctrine and its limited application in commercial speech, but I think for the future of attorney advertising, the ban ought to be struck down.
But in this case,
I realize what the law says.
In this case, there is no record or no fact-finding that explains things like Justice Blackmun raised. How did it come to this person's attention? I mean, to whom would this letter be sent? Is it just people that he has factual knowledge about? Because he says, if this is true, which suggests otherwise. What is the free information on how he can keep his home that he's offering? If you hire him, maybe he can help, or is he going to give him free legal advice? We don't know from the record in this case, do we?
We don't know. Other than all we have is what's on the face of the letter. That's all we have.
So what you quoted from Zauderer said the written advertisement may include legal advice of some kind, but there's no legal advice in this letter.
Yes, there is. I beg your pardon, but it does talk about the possibility of bankruptcy, and that would be the legal advice.
Where does it say anything about bankruptcy? Where would the layman know it said anything about bankruptcy? Because federal law may allow you to keep your home and so forth, but That doesn't tell me. I'm a layman. I'm not sure that means
that's correct, but that's the legal advice. Federal law may permit you to keep your home. Also, this rule prohibiting targeted direct mail solicitation doesn't make any sense. Take the Zauderer advertisement. If we identify people, women, who have this potential problem, and we send that specific advertisement to them, then that's not permitted under this rule. Take another step. If we take the Shapiro letter and we send it to everybody in Hart County, Kentucky, everybody in Hart County, Kentucky, even though there are only five people in Hart County, Kentucky, who are interested in getting it, then that's okay. What you're faced with is a situation where Dick Shapiro can get his message across if he's willing to send out this letter to 4,995 people.
Well, Mr. Cox, may I interrupt there? You say it'd be okay, but it would be false as to all but five of those people. Yeah. It says it's come to my attention your home's being foreclosed on, and 99% of the recipients, that would be a false statement.
You think
that's a proper letter?
That's correct. He could modify it slightly in the way that Justice Blackmun suggested it. Or he could say if your home is being subjected to foreclosure, you may want to contact
me. But we're asked to approve this letter.
That's correct. On a record where there's no fact-finding going the other way. There's nothing in the record which indicates that there's any problem with this letter. And
Mr. Cox, you don't think it's at all misleading to say federal law may enable you to federal law may allow you to keep your home by ordering your creditors to stop and give you more time to pay them? You don't think it would have been a little more forthright to tell the people you can take bankruptcy, which seems a good deal less attractive than a federal law that allows you to keep your home by ordering your creditors to stop? I think that's a little bit misleading.
I don't believe that that's misleading, no. I mean, if there are...
You don't think it's a close question that we might want to get the views of... Some state bar association or some state authorities on before we say that it isn't.
It is my view that another question that could be asked, and I don't want to answer a question with a question, but shouldn't you say that ask whether the people in there had been in the district 180 days or whatever that number is for bankruptcy and
you miss my point. I'm saying bankruptcy is not as attractive to many people as a federal law that enables them to tell their creditors to stop.
And it's my view that that's not demonstrably misleading. If you require every nit of the law to be set forth in every advertisement, we won't have effective advertisements.
I don't think calling bankruptcy is every nit of the law.
We also believe that eliminating the rule will provide there are many good benefits from having this kind of advertising. Remember, we're talking about an advertising that has been pre-reviewed by a state regulatory agency that has been edited and will be sent out only after extensive bar association review. Is it better for people to get legal advice from that kind of information based upon, is it better for people to find out about the availability of legal services under those circumstances or from the next door neighbor or in a bar or who knows where? We're talking about a situation where we're making legal advice and advertising legal services that are clearly regulated by the Bar Association. The other alternatives provide information about lawyers under situations which are much less likely to be truthful and non-deceptive.
We certainly don't know in this case that the Kentucky Supreme Court said this this targeted solicitation is has to be banned under our rule, even though it is not deceptive, and even though it is truthful, and even though it is not misleading? They didn't say that.
All they said was they recognized that that finding, that there was no finding to that effect in the administrative agencies below, and then they dropped it.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's assume a court, having read the cases that you brought before them, thought that no advertising by a lawyer can be banned, no advertising like this can be banned unless it's false or misleading, as long as it's truthful. And then it just says, we do not approve this letter.
Without saying why?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here's a court that knows the rules and just says, without any explanation, it just bans the letter. Don't we assume that the court applied the rule that it knows is applicable and that it made the, even though it didn't say so, that it made the right findings?
That would be my assumption. My assumption, I mean, I think the clear, if you read the Kentucky decision, my time has expired.
Your answer to Justice White's question.
If you read the Kentucky decision, it seems clear that the Kentucky Supreme Court banned this advertisement because it was targeted direct mail advertising. They didn't ban it because...
Not untruthful, not misleading.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right.
Even
thank you, Mr. Cox. we'll hear now from you, Mr. Doheny.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, there are two parts to the argument that I would like to present, and the first is a jurisdictional one. It was touched on briefly by Justice Stevens in a question that he asked. Listening to petitioner's argument, the Court might conclude that what we had below was an attack on the entire Kentucky advertising process. That is not the case. Justice Stevens asked, was the letter reviewed after Rule 7.3 was adopted? And the answer to that is emphatically no. The Kentucky Supreme Court opinion begins with these words. This is a petition for review of Supreme Court Rule 3.135, which has been interpreted by the Advertising Commission to prohibit targeted direct mail advertising by lawyers.
Well, how did it disapprove this letter?
The Kentucky Supreme Court did not, as such, approve this letter, Justice White.
Well, it disapproved it.
It did neither. What it said was that Rule 3.135 pertaining to advertising was too broad. What petitioner asked below was that Rule 3.135 be deleted. And what Kentucky did in referring to Zauderer three times in the opinion of the court was specifically, they said, it is the decision of this court that Supreme Court Rule 3.135 be deleted. That is what they did.
Well, do you think that Shapiro was free to go ahead with his advertisement after the Kentucky Supreme Court decision?
No, Justice White, I do
not.
Well,
if he wasn't, they must have applied some rule to ban it.
They did.
And what did they apply?
At the time they deleted Rule 3.135, they adopted a new rule, ABA Model Rule 7.3, I'm sorry, sir.
Well, the claim is that that Kentucky is not entitled under the First Amendment to bar this particular letter.
And that claim...
And that claim was rejected.
If the Court please, I believe that claim was raised for the first time in this Court, and that is the heart of our jurisdictional argument. That what petitioner attacked in the trial court was Rule 3.135, which he asked be deleted.
Well, what he said, what he claimed was that he's entitled to publish this or to mail this advertisement. He's entitled to do it under the First Amendment.
And that
that's his claim, as against any Kentucky rule.
And that gets to the substantive issue, Justice White, as to whether Kentucky can constitutionally ban the letter as proposed by Shapiro. I think the answer to that is, again, emphatically, yes, it can be banned.
But isn't that the issue before us, and isn't it properly before us?
I think the issue is not properly before you, Justice White, because it was not raised in the Kentucky Supreme Court. What was raised in the Kentucky Supreme Court was a challenge to Rule 3.135. When the court adopted Model Rule 7.3, petitioner had the right to seek rehearing or modification or to begin a new proceeding. He did none of those. He simply sought certiorari from this court. So we contend that by his failure to raise that issue in the Kentucky courts, he has deprived this court of jurisdiction.
Well, but that seems rather strained to me, because he never knew about Rule 7.3 until the Supreme Court of Kentucky adopted it. And if 7.3 tracks in many respects the rule he was attacking, and during the course of the litigation, the authority with the body with authority to do so says, well, now this rule you're attacking is no longer in effect, but a new rule is, and he has the same complaint about that, doesn't that strike you as rather highly technical to say you'd have to go back and start all over?
Mr. Chief Justice, it does not, for these reasons. The old rule began, a written advertisement may be sent. The new rule begins, a lawyer may not solicit professional employment. In other words, it is the distinction between advertising on the one hand and solicitation on the other. This court has said that a state can ban solicitation in person in Aurelic. Now, what Kentucky did was adopt, without advance notice, admittedly, but what it did was adopt a new rule at the time Shapiro asked them to delete Rule 3.135.
The Kentucky Supreme Court disapproved this letter. It did it not?
It did.
It disapproved it, did it not?
Yes.
And did it not disapprove it on the basis of the new rule?
Yes.
Well, then why isn't the case here? That's what he's bringing here.
Well, our position is that new rule should have first been challenged in the Kentucky Supreme Court rather than before this court.
Well, what chance do you think a challenge would have had in the Kentucky Supreme Court after that court had adopted the rule?
And applied it to this case.
I can't get inside the mind of the Kentucky Supreme Court, but they, like other courts, are willing to listen and to be educated, and if there was a challenge to the new rule, I think they would apply their wisdom and experience to it and the facts that are presented to that court about the rule.
Mr. Doheny, it would be a different question if all the Kentucky Supreme Court did was to say, you're right, the old rule's no good, we're adopting a new rule. But it didn't just do that. You say that it went further. And in that situation, I can understand why you would say you have to go back and see whether, under state law, this thing is bad under the new rule. But the court didn't stop there. It said, we're adopting this new rule, and your letter is bad under the new rule.
Well, perhaps I...
Did it say that or not? If it didn't say that, you have a different...
Perhaps I overstated it, Mr. Justice Scalia, because it does not say in the opinion that they made a finding with respect to this letter. They simply say that with respect to Rule 7.3, this is an appropriate rule which we now adopt as the law of this Commonwealth.
Well, your response to one of the other justices' questions was that indeed there has been a determination that this letter is no good. Now you're saying there has not been.
I believe I was in error when I said that. Yes.
I don't think so. The next sentence says, we affirm the decision of the Ethics Committee to deny the request. And the request was to mail out this letter. So I think they not only said this is an appropriate rule which adopt as the law of the case, but then go on and affirm the ruling. May I ask just one other procedural question?
Certainly.
Am I correct in recalling that you did not make this argument in your response to the petition for certiorari?
It is true. We were not counsel for the Kentucky Bar Association below. We came to this issue late. We did not make it.
You have a problem under the Tuttle opinion.
We did make it late.
Mr. Doheny, it strikes me you'd be well advised to spend time on the merits of the case, because I think your jurisdiction argument may be unpersuasive. And on the merits, I'm wondering whether under the new rule you would take the position that an advertisement like this, if it were deemed not misleading, could be published in the newspaper and then copies of the ad mailed directly to the targeted recipients?
I think that if the substance of the letter, Justice O'Connor, were deemed to be not misleading, without question in Kentucky, it could appear in a newspaper. We have broad rules.
Yes, and then could the newspaper ad be mailed, copies of it, to the targeted recipients?
No, not under the rule. It could go to a mass, a group of persons under the rule, with whom, well, it could go to a group of persons as long as they were not targeted. Some of those people may, under the rule, need the services that are offered.
Well, under the First Amendment analysis, why is it more of a concern by the state to protect the recipients from opening up the ad in an envelope than from reading it in their newspaper?
I think the distinction is that has been touched upon by this court, and it gets to the ability of a trained advocate to persuade on a personal basis. Admittedly, the letter is not as personal as the lawyer in your home or in your hospital room, as was banned in O'Reilly. Nevertheless, as the Florida court observed in Schreiber, a letter from a lawyer carries a special aura, and I would wager that if all of us returned to our homes tonight and had a letter from a real estate agent or a lawyer, we'd open the lawyer's letter first.
Well, if what's in the envelope is a copy of an ad clipped out of a newspaper, why isn't that? Why shouldn't it be treated like the newspaper ad?
The newspaper ad is a generalized statement of advertising. And advertising is, I think, by definition, going to a group of people as opposed to solicitation, which goes to a more limited group. Now, I see no harm that comes from a person receiving a newspaper ad which may or may not apply to it. It is very different from a target who has been identified as either facing foreclosure or being the victim of an automobile accident or something else. There is a difference between the general nature of the advertisement as opposed to the in-person or the letter solicitation, which, Justice O'Connor, becomes, as soon as that call is returned, what this letter says, for example, is, call now, don't wait, and the minute that call is returned, we have in-person solicitation by the lawyer, which this court has said a state could properly prohibit.
But you could say the same thing in the newspaper ad, call now, don't wait, and the same result would ensue. Really, the only difference I see between the two is that one is economically more efficient than the other, and is there some vice in economically more efficient advertising? Instead of, you have the same ad, it reads exactly the same, and you say you can put it in the newspaper, but you can't mail it specifically to certain individuals.
To a targeted individual.
Well, if you want to call it targeted, I'll call it specific.
All right, sir.
You
could mail it generally to those who do not, are not known to have the problem, some of whom may.
It's a rather odd First Amendment doctrine that we forbid ads only when they're targeted at people that are interested in them, which is the purport of your argument.
Well, I'm trying to draw a distinction between advertising on the one hand and, again, solicitation on the other. I suggest respectfully that there is a fundamental difference, and that what Mr. Shapiro chose to do here is solicitation to a specific individual, which I believe a state can, under the rulings of this court in O'Reilly, properly prohibit because of the ability of the lawyer to overreach.
So basically you're saying you can't be too effective.
I wouldn't word it that way, Justice Kennedy. I would say that some of the reasons against solicitation are, there are numerous ones. We don't know if the person has a viable case. We don't know if the recipient has retained a lawyer. We don't know the mental or emotional state of the recipient when the solicitation arrives there. I think there are valid reasons that can result in the prohibition against solicitation, and the possibility or probability, whichever term you choose to use, of overreaching is far greater on a specific communication than it is in a newspaper or television advertisement, which you're free to reject rather easily. This court has held, and it's important to bear in mind that the Kentucky court did not reach its conclusion in a vacuum. It made a number of findings. It found, in its opinion involving Shapiro, that dangers result from direct solicitation, whether in person or by mail. It stated that it was not unmindful of the potential for serious abuse with direct solicitation. It held that the submission of a blank form letter would not provide suitable protection for the public, and it stated that under Kentucky rules, advertising was available to inform the public of the need for legal services and the qualifications of those about to offer them without the risk that comes with in-person solicitation. This morning, some new lawyers were admitted as members of this bar, and the Chief Justice welcomed them as officers of this court. This court in Virginia Board of Pharmacy said the state has a strong interest in maintaining professionalism among licensed pharmacists. If that is true with dispensers of a product, and surely it is, how much more true it must be with officers of the court who can invoke the powers of the court for good or for evil. We suggest that Kentucky was within its rights in adopting Model Rule 7.3, and that the decision of the Kentucky Supreme Court should be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Doheny. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument next.